interesting to call him that he's a Cork man. I didn't realise that, and this is kind of about Cork. Just as way of explanation, some people might know the two places mentioned in this poem, Mourne Abbey and Burnford.
Yes, I know.
Probably from
my part of the world.
So they're just small towns between here and Mallow.
Yes.
And they're where my mother's mother is from, so I mentioned them here. But this poem is, you'll have to excuse my French, no, I never learned French, but this poem is called Accoutrement. I say accoutrement the Mourne Abbey way, just like my mother did. And Mallow's Mallow still, as if I'd just come down from Burnford now to view Cork City for the first time. There in the distance, she married Dad, and I and Ari Jar received their twine, a mellow mix of muskery, guaylas, lore, and city slang. When talking with friends, my ones grow one, and every fragment ends in like or by. I try to keep control and company of all the deeds and does, but some escape, like childish phrases, bursting to be free. They cannot understand where they are held captive, only in certain company. My elocution lessons taught me just enough, but never quite uprooted all the dross. My butts are butts, my father's fathers, and old Ramesh's plug up my sentences. And when reciting poetry, attempting to curtail my natural lilt, esteeming to some higher idiolect, I often think that though I try to take me out of Cork, I cannot seem to take Cork out of me.
So an inch Craigie Fodger of Teresa Fitzgerald.
Without a sound. All through the night, they love so soft and sweet, so entwined, they couldn't tell where they'd start to meet. Nature lying in his lover's sweet embrace, he sadly gazed upon her beautiful face. He could never tell her why, he had to leave her, he could never lie. So softly he left her, oh so serene, but pained in his heart, he opened the window and thus did depart.
Thank you. And next up, we'll have Edna Keats.
This poem is quite refined compared to the first poem I wrote, which was very passionate and very. But anyway. This poem is titled Peril Change, Citizens of Ireland. Now is the time to quit talking, be proactive. Take a stand against you who meet it out, making servants of us, not listening to our hearts' concerns. We citizens of Ireland need to wake up, remembering choices. Talking till the cows come home changes not stately demise. Time to call a halt, stop you in your tracks of supremacy, raining down on us, quenching our spirit, milking us dry, pumping you up, taking us for granted. No capital gains for us, Enda. Stop calling the shots, get real with us, govern fairly, listen to our hearts' concerns, step into our shoes. Feel the tread of our existence. Make life worth living for each one of us. Citizens of Ireland, herald change. To hell with moo moo. Let's march the streets. Make our presence felt. Take a stand for justice. Together we have the power. Let's move.
Hey. And then we'd have a Margaret Utterskill piece.
Down the bog, I watched you hack the grassy top along the turf bank steep. I sat snapping water horse tails and saw peat brown water seep. I saw you hold the trusty slan, and dig deep along a line, marking out the sods of turf as the April sun did shine. I heard the squelch of soggy peat, so water deep and dank, as you cut under each sod and lobbed them on the bank. You poured tea from a billy can, we ate brown bread and ham, just the two of us together, we shared the scones and jam. The silence sometimes broken by a cuckoo or a frog, it added to the memories of days spent down the bog. The sods were spread out on the ground and left for days to dry. One by one they were then turned beneath a cloudless sky. Days later they were gathered, propped to dry out, stack by stack. With spaces left between them, it was hard on the back. We often heard the pillabeen, peewit at the end of day. Those happy times are long gone, but in my heart they'll stay.
Your model, August Inish, Judith Backus.
Thank you. This poem came about just one day. I was walking in the forest and I felt a bit overburdened, and a thought came to me. Wouldn't it be fantastic if I had some form of bee to carry my soul for me? Because it felt a bit too heavy. I take a walk with you. I take a walk with you out there in the forest. A shimmering leaf, my soul, resting in the palm of your hand. The morning dew gathers on fragile gossamer threads. Each droplet a sparkling crystal, trembling on breezes sighing breath. Vibrant ivy ascends a woven trail on tall guardians of the wood, like delicate patterns of lace, which, upon my heart, your fingers took. I step into a pool of light, the warm glow caressing my face. The brook, bringing your voice to life, bubbles soothingly away in haste. I take a walk with you out there in the forest, proud as you carry my soul in the palm of your hand.
Next, please, we have a Frank E. Lee.
So, Plinel for Jim. On slanting ground outside the city, they buried him. Among the many working people he had served, in the coffin, his hands lay unjoined by his sides. In life, he saw that they got what they deserved. For his funeral, there were no prime seats reserved on slanting ground outside the city as they buried him. No incense, no flowers, no priestly garb appeared inside. Only Stephen Foster's beautiful dreamer accompanied Jim in the coffin, his hands lay unjoined by his sides. There was no ringing bell, no sad funeral hymn, no bishop's powerful purple, no shiny signet ring as on slanting ground outside the city they buried him. There was no choir, no mournful song to say abide with death or decay or history's ebbing tide. In the coffin, his hands lay unjoined by his sides. Have no fear, shed no tear, fly the red flag here among the many working people he had served. In the coffin, his hands lay unjoined by his sides.
Thank you. Is that on the Boston Kyung Shun? Or else, or what? Next day, Patricia Watt, please.
Thank you, Betty. This is called Goodbye. After several meetings in the shopping mall, we cement our acquaintance. Slowed by and tapped out with the face, we dispose of time as we see fit, forgetting our face in the universe. But emptiness attacked me. It's not your fault the cafe is closed on Mondays. Maybe that there's more to life than newspapers, and my body won't fill itself nor Clement Rieu. Goodbye.
Hey, next up we have Joe McHale, please.
This poem is called The Lighthouse. Pounded by the stormy sea, stronger than the strongest tree, a solitary house of light, beacon shining in the night. Beam waxing, waning and repeating, rhythmically like a heart beating. It does not shimmer, it does not flicker, it is not fickle. Nautical signal, warning of dangerous obstacle, lighting up coast from times biblical. Saviour of storm-tossed sailors, from the rocks of deliverance, welcoming into the arms of the harbour the sailor after his maritime labour.
This leg mayor, David Brown.
I don't realize I walk and ponder, inspiration being my subject for wonder. Nothing new really, the same philosophical questions I posed to myself about my own human nature, that only a wise sage long deceased could answer. So I'm left with my young mind to provide incomplete answers, born from convoluted presumptions and inexperience. I'm not worldly wise, so I'm left unsatisfied. This only fuels my hunger for self-knowledge, so more questions are asked, and even more left unanswered. It doesn't bother me, though, with time knowledge will throw me a bone. Faintly I hear the rosy cries of adulation and celebration that have formed from the ambience of the city, the people becoming one to give the city a voice, to acknowledge the end of a day and a welcome to night. But that's only just about registered. Not enough to truly stir me from my intellectual reverie, or so I like to call it. I'm walking in a quiet place, a forgotten part of the city, where one wouldn't hear a mouse scamper. Decay easing at the buildings surrounding me, and the windows black with darkness, caked with dust and age. A silent and somber callback to a time long before me. Faces once peered up from there. This adds a gothic edge to my mood, and I soak in the atmosphere. I turn a corner, and what I see before me causes me to put a full halt to my step and mental speculation. Before me is an old lady bent with age. She looks the part, a small cap on her crown, and clad in this coat two sizes too big, and her feet shod in right runners. An odd, eclectic choice of attire, but my metaphorical hat offer for a bold combination of clothing. She is surrounded by a cloud of cats, mewing and purring. She pulls out something shiny from her little trolley and reveals something rich and red in amongst the crinkled silver. The cats swell in number and emit a collective purr of anticipation and hunger, yearning for the rich red gift they are about to receive. I remain unseen as I watch with curious intent. It is only me and the great cosmic eye that bear witness to this rare show of affection that one would seldom see in today's convoluted world of superficiality and detachment. I see more poignant and touching than any turtlenecked punts could ever hope to emulate with his so-called art house play of images. This is something very unique. It's seldom beheld by anyone. The wind begins to howl, and it adds an eerie edge to what I witness. The old street lights cast upon her a ghostly quality. I decided to make myself known. I walked by her to gift her with a friendly hello. Her body stiffens and her eyes framed with fright. She gives me a half-hearted wave. She turns back to her cats again, seeks solace and security. I see her for what she is, a lonely, forgotten old lady. Her generation and all those she knew long gone to some sodden grave. I've seen her since then a few times at that exact spot amongst the old building in the street, familiar to her. But there will be a time when she is no longer there and the cats will go hungry. I think, being at the age that I am in my mind, to whatever lonely and solitary place I go to think and ponder, that the old lady and her cats will always have a place within me, and her spirits will never need to feel alone and hunger for company again.
Next we have Kieran McCurtain.
It's called the Unknown Hotel. Pay thousands for education, but you can go and die for free, and represent your racist father and that beloved country in the same empty war they can't remember what they started for. Head up, chin up, shoulders back, in that flag-draped casket, passion, pride, and youth let go like an elastic. Your mother prunes her flowers in her hanging basket. She says she treats them like her child. She says her son had badges. He got an honorable mention in the local newspaper, in those pages where they've got freedom to sell, next to an advert saying, "You can stay for free at the Unknown Hotel." I spoke to my friend in letter just the other day. We spoke about death being wrong. He told me what to say. He said, "Where'd you get an idea like that? The US of A, where they sleep six of their own every single day. The stripes are drenched in blood, and the free land makes them pay for the honor that they're born with, the promised glory for which they stay. The free men, they come flocking to the game of show and tell, to teach their pretty women's children how to spell. Names of heroes in their history, the guardians of the well, where water creates thirst and power has a smell. And you can sense it in the hallways of the Unknown Hotel." The preacher spoke from the righteous pages as he looked down at the faces of all ages. And in his opening address he said, "Allow me put this idea inside your head, that I, the preacher, I, the pastor, look to my one and only master. And the end is coming fast, and to the little girl that passed, he stooped down low to ask, precious darling, dressed in white, when the wings of love take flight, can you see a devil? Can you feel hell?" She said, "I can hear him laughing in the lobby of the Unknown Hotel." And his teeth were as black as the sky at night is blue and silver and looking at you. Thank you.
So, Neil Troer, Fogg, and Winganish, I guess, for Duke Square, Glen Glake, or Alan O'Quaitlyuk.
If you could just bear with me for a minute there while I get set up. That was an amazing poem. So I was in the Santana bus in Lahore, Missoula. I was quite intrigued by the idea of working as a terminologist. And I thought that... And just while you were reading, I kind of wrote down this poem, which I'll just get now, actually. Excuse me. Thanks, sir. So, I think the idea of working, like, a terminologist, I don't know what it actually is, but I thought of, you know, making up words, you know, as a job, you know, it sounds fantastic.
It's
a job proposal. Yeah. So that's what this poem was about. So I kind of want to perform it with fiddle, but I'll just kind of give the translation first so that people know what I'm talking about. So focula comma is kind of making up a word, or composing a word is a nice word. So hit and cunus fidraked an ahas. So that's that. The poem is like silence fell under the enchantment of happiness, and to compose a word, silence and happiness, down to Kayla Marlan on, so together like lovers, and Kyol Erim and Magna, so that's music on the edge of my mind, and then I come up with the word Ahiyums, which is like a combination of happiness and silence. So that's the idea. That's better than your captions. Thank you. it's hard to play, you know, because I'm not warmed up or anything, but sure, I'll try. Some cunus fidriacs and ahas, fucking coma, ahas agus and cunus, a janta, a kaila marlanon, agus kyola imil magana, aha yunus. I'm writing a book at the moment, and this is the first, it's kind of the introduction. So if you bear with me, I don't have it memorized, so I kind of can get the essence of it. It was a cold, bleak morning, and Eddie says, "Let's get into the large, fent green tractor with long telescopic arms extending out in front, with Lucky the black and white dog in tow behind. We're going to plant the old potatoes," Eddie said. Eddie was a large man, bald, with balding head and big farmer hands. On the back of the tractor, there's an old-fashioned potato planter, which is shaped like a large cake tin. And inside of the cake tin, inside of the potato planter, are these tracks. And on the tracks are these compartments, which are a little bit like the bottoms of Red Bull cans on the underside of a Red Bull can, and the potatoes are picked up on these tracks, and they go along on the tracks, and then they are fed into the ground, and the tractor pushes the earth aside, and the potatoes fall in. And my job is to stand on the back of the tractor like a little boy on the back of a milk float and put the potatoes in the empty compartments. And the tractor goes forward at about 5 miles per hour, and sometimes when the tractor moves, there's a bit of a kick and you get pulled off the tractor. But that's usually okay, you just kind of slowly walk behind and ask the tractor to stop and get back on. But this time, instead of waiting for the tractor to slow down, I kind of hopped, skipped and jumped back onto the back of the tractor. And as I did this, I lost my balance and put my hand into the tracks of the tractor. And I got my fingers wedged into the tracks. And the tractor came to a halt, and I'm in absolute excruciating agony, pain, the most sustaining pain that I've experienced in my life. But something in this excruciating pain seems to burn through all the facades of my life and makes me very present. I'm in pain, but something in this pain makes me very present. And somewhere in this, my mind wanders off, how did I end up here? I don't have it written down. It was much more detailed than the thing, but there you go. So, and I'm going to quickly read a poem. Sorry, that was a bit shit. But,
kind of interesting when you've actually written something down and meant to orally articulate it. It's different. I wrote a poem for my godson recently. I was honoured to be the godfather, or the fairy godfather, as they call me, of my friend's children. They didn't have like a baptism, they had a blessing, they planted a tree. So very quickly, this is a poem. Oren, a new light in our hearts, a new baby brings optimism to the future. We are blessed to have your presence in our lives, your deep blue ocean eyes carrying dolphin mystery. Though you're physically fragile, your spirit is strong. May you grow strong in the years to come, bound with love, guided by truth and knowledge of your parents. Thank you for being here. Many blessings of love and peace. Thank you.
Okay, and finally, concluded the Cora Legionita, Brian Keane.
Thoughts are their own man, things in themselves with their own life force. They don't belong to us. We just give them a welcoming home. Thoughts, they want to grow, to move forward like everything else. They're looking to attract attention from a rock or a bird or a man, to be made into something with lines and edges and someday eyes that sparkle bright. A thought is on its way to being a sage. After the sage completes his mission, his ideas now lodge in the minds of men. He returns himself to being a thought, maybe something noble and true, hopefully to be welcomed by a high, fine mind, maybe by you.